Hello and welcome to the First Take Film Club podcast. My name is Luke Chandley and today I am joined by my usual co-host, or one of my usual co-hosts, but also a really special guest. So today we are joined by Danielle White from Your Girls on Film. It's like a kind of blog and all things movie site. And we're really, really excited to have Danielle here. So Danielle, hello, how are you?
Hi, I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, really good. Thank you very much. We have a thing on this podcast where we tend to not ask how the host is, and then at the end, the host will be like, "Oh yeah, by the way, I'm fine." So you've written that. That's a good start.
Okay.
Do you want to just only for 1 minute? Do you want to just tell us a little bit about the blog, kind of like what you've done previously?
Yeah, sure.
And that.
So my name is Danielle, and I run a blog called Your Gals on Film. It is at Your Gals, so YAGALS on Film on Instagram. I started as sort of like an inclusive place to talk about films. I felt like it was all boys speaking about films and women, no female voices. But really, I'm just trying to broaden my horizons in terms of film and watch more like inclusive films, watch more foreign films, watch films directed by women, also films not directed by women. So yeah, that's how it started. Before that, I also run a film blog, not film blog, a food blog, but it is sort of film related because it's at the Breakfast Club blog.
Nice.
I eat breakfast and talk about it.
That's awesome. I really love breakfast. We used to speak a lot about breakfast. We used to speak a lot about breakfast on this podcast, didn't we? When we recorded together, we'd like discuss what we had on, like on air. We'd do like admin, breakfast admin on air.
So we used to like go to Starbucks. We'd go to Starbucks and then we'd go and record. So it'd usually be Connor would have the breakfast bap from Starbucks. I tend to just have a very large coffee for my breakfast. Mm-hmm. Which I've got right now as well.
Always got in the baby group mug.
Oh yeah,
I love it. What did I have for breakfast this morning? Crunchy nut cornflakes. I'm really into crunchy nut cornflakes at the moment, which obviously isn't like an exciting breakfast, but
breakfast of champions.
It is, isn't it? Sets you up perfectly for the day. Right, amazing. Enough about breakfast. Thanks, Danielle. We're really excited to like have you on and chat about the film that we are discussing today, which obviously is Jaws, if you've read the title of the podcast, Steven Spielberg's Jaws. And it's a film that I really love, but obviously we'll have a big chat about that in a little while. But first, I will introduce my esteemed co-host, Liam Jones. Liam, how are you, mate?
Hi, yes, I am very well, thank you very much. I've actually only just woken up about half an hour ago. It's because I worked yesterday and I was up at 4 a.m. and only had 2 hours sleep. And instead of having a nap when I got back from work, I had a little half an hour nap and then I just stayed up. And I actually threw on last night the new Justice League Snyder Cut and turned it off after half an hour.
Was it too edgy?
It's just a bit... The first one was crap, and this one's just a little bit pretentious. I probably will finish it in the end, but not how it's I was like, feeling last night. I just threw on The Simpsons instead.
Nice. You know,
why not? The Simpsons is always fine. It's always fine to watch.
It's always fine, isn't it? Absolutely. We obviously usually have Connor, and unfortunately, Connor's a little bit sickly today. He said he's got, you don't need to know, I suppose, as a listener, but he's got a bit of a migraine. So obviously we were like, yeah, that's fine. And with having an additional host, that kind of set itself out perfectly. And what we're going to try and do is in kind of once a month or so, we're going to try and have like another person on for a couple of reasons, really, just to... It's nice to chat to someone else as well, but also just to open up a few more films and see some fresh faces and this, that, and the other. So that's kind of what we're going to kind of try and do over the next few, kind of 6 months, try and have like kind of six guests on. So if you'd like to come on, just give us a shout. So we'll get on to, before we get onto the films, obviously, as I've said, we're talking about Steven Spielberg's Jaws, but I have got a slightly Jaws-related opening question. So I was thinking this morning, so it got to about 9:45, and I'd said to kind of everyone on the pod that I haven't even got an opening question yet, so bear with me. So I kind of struggled around a little bit. And I kind of had a thought of something that's attached to Jaws for me. So I have some really good memories of this film, and I thought what would be a really cool question to ask the guys is, What is your either your favorite or just generally a good memory that you have attached to a film or maybe even a cinema experience? So what I'll do is I'll throw it to Danielle first. So Danielle, have you had a chance to have a little think in the about 15 minutes since you got the question?
I did. So obviously last night was the first time I watched Jaws, but a memory I've got related to Jaws is a friend when I was in high school, she would go to Florida every year. They'd always go to like Disney and Universal, and she'd always come back and tell me about the Jaws ride. And I'd be like, oh my God, how can the shark be that big? Like, so I suppose that's like the only memory really of Jaws. Like, and I would say very esteemed film with Steven Spielberg, but yeah, I always just associate with that really sick ride in Universal Studios.
Nice, nice. Liam, general memory attached to a movie. Good, well, hopefully good memory.
See, when you first said it, I immediately thought of, I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, maybe I have, maybe I haven't. But it was probably like 2 years ago when me and my parents all got very, very drunk and watched Love Actually, and it was very wholesome and very, very nice and yeah, just a really nice memory of just kind of like sitting down watching the film and being like happy at Christmas time, which was really nice and sweet. I know, isn't that so cute?
That is absolutely lovely to honest
I
with
really
you.
like that.
I wasn't, I didn't know what, obviously we didn't have much time to talk about it, so I didn't ask anyone what those was going to be. And that is a lovely one because I absolutely love Love Actually. And my memory, so it's interesting that Danielle has mentioned one to do with Jaws, because like when I opened the question with I have like a particular good memory, it is of going to Universal and going on the ride. Like maybe even before I'd like seen the film, possibly like when I was, because I think I went when I was quite young, and I imagine,
And it's
I don't know.
a old film.
Yeah, it's an old film, and it's and like the ride isn't there anymore, I don't think. I think they moved it, but
Isn't
yeah, no, so they set up like a big Harry Potter area, and that's there
it?
now. But my memory is of like just like kind of family holidays really, which is attached to like the movie Jaws. And I'm just going to go with that one. I mean, there's probably loads more, like, you know, just going to the cinema with friends and stuff. But that's what I went with. So I think, yeah, I think Universal Studios has got some good props from this podcast so far.
I'm pretty sure I've.
Were you surprised about the size of the shark when you're on the ride?
I don't remember, you know. I don't even remember really. Maybe I was, because I was pretty young. So I was like, I imagine the shark was probably about the size of me, really. So. I can't really remember it though, but yeah, kind of been that big or about that scary to me. But Liam, go ahead, mate. What are you saying?
Was gonna say, I'm pretty sure I've been to Universal Studios in, there's one in Spain, or there was one in Spain, and I'm pretty sure they had a Jaws one there, and I was quite young, so it's not a very clear memory, but I'm pretty sure I remember either walking past it or looking at it. I don't think I went on it though. I don't think I went on it. I was probably too young. I just thought I'd add that in there. It's probably a little bit of a pointless one, to be honest, but I've walked past a ride that resembled Jaws, maybe. There we go.
I feel like that's good. At least we've all got kind of similar answers, or at least anecdotes of this particular ride from all like many different aspects. So one from friend, one personally, and one just walking past thinking, maybe one day I'll record a podcast about this movie. Okay,
It
awesome.
mad the way like it was a ride in Universal Studios? Like obviously there's like film tie-ins with everything, like he was saying the Harry Potter ride and everything, but I wonder if Steven Spielberg ever thought when he was making these films, like one day this will be a ride in a
Yeah.
Universal Studios theme park.
That's
Like
interesting you say that, actually, because I was thinking about this last night, and because there's also an ET ride and there's also a Jurassic Park ride. So like Professor Scorsese hates him, honest to God. He
It is
thinks.
mad what rides they can do out of any type of film. It's like I went to Disneyland Paris last year or the year before, and they've got a Ratatouille ride, and it's
That looks
literally just like
amazing.
you just kind of like go around in the dark on like a little like rat, and it's like these 3D holograms appear of like Remy the Rat and all the characters from the film. The best thing about that, actually, I know we need to get onto the next point in a minute, but the best thing about it, honestly, is the queue. So when you're queuing up, it's like they've literally built up the whole like set of the film all around you, and it's and they're playing like the music from the film and stuff. It's really cool.
That's cool.
Yeah. I love this. I love Disneyland. It's great.
Yeah, it's my favorite place. I watched the Florida Project the other day, and obviously at the end they wrote. Have you seen it, Danielle?
The Florida Project. No, is that with Willem Dafoe?
Yeah. Well, I won't spoil it. I was about to spoil it, but I won't.
Don't spoil it.
Basically, it's Boss, and the end is really sweet, and you should watch it. I watched it again the other day. But yeah. Anyway, enough of spoiling films that our guests have just never seen before. We'll move on to the film that they have seen. So obviously, we are here today, and we're going to have a little chat about Jaws, which is or was Danielle's first take. So me and Liam, I have seen it a few times. I've got it on Blu-ray, and I think Liam's seen it a few times as well. So what we'll do is I'll just give you a bit of basic info, and then maybe run through the plot of the movie, and then we'll just throw it to Danielle to just kind of tell us her first take and what she thought. So, yeah, this film was made in 1975 and was obviously directed by Steven Spielberg. The budget was $9 million, which I don't know at the time, may have been a lot, I don't think it was. But the box office, it made $472 million and at the time became the highest grossing movie of all time, which is pretty mad, really, because I think even if a film made like $472 now, they'd probably be like, if it wasn't a big film, that's pretty solid. So yeah, it became the highest grossing movie of all time before 2 years later, Star Wars took that mantle. It stars Roy Scheider, I don't know how you say that name, Scheider as Martin Brody, Richard Dreyfuss as Hooper. Was it Hopper or Hooper?
Hooper.
It's spelled Hooper, but I just don't remember it.
The man on the boat, Quint, kept shouting his name. And I was like, they are not
going to
get on.
Oh, yeah, they have an argument, don't they? Yeah. And that's.
There's some great stories about their offset relationships. I don't know if you've heard about them. Yeah, I might talk about them later if it comes up. It's pretty interesting.
Well, that's good because we've got a bit where we talk about the performances and the people, and I've not really wrote much to the agenda. So we'll just cut straight to you to just discuss these anecdotes. And that means, let's not forget, Robert Shaw as Quint, the kind of rather madcap shark hunter, he says he is. He doesn't do very well particularly, but he's a shark hunter. And I think everyone kind of knows the plot of the film. It's not exactly particularly complicated. So I'll just describe it briefly. Basically, a shark kind of makes its way to Amity Island, which is this fictional island in America, and just basically has its way with a load of the people who live there, a load of the community, and then Chief Brody is sent with a couple of other people to try and capture the shark, and that's generally the story, and it goes on for a couple of hours. I know it sounds pretty crap, but it's absolutely amazing. Let's start with Danielle, and what were your first thoughts on the movie? Like, so obviously you watched it last night or this week. What did you think straight after the movie?
I really enjoyed it. I thought you can see why it was a classic. One of the things was because it was so simple. I loved the way it was like done in like clear acts.
Yeah.
Of like the first act was obviously like the terror building up, and I like the way it just built up throughout the film. And no, I did really enjoy it, and it's beautiful to watch as well. That is Steven Spielberg doing what he does best.
Yeah, definitely. That's quite interesting because a little bit later I've discussed about how like straightforward it is. But it is. I properly love it when you can just see how a film is mapped out. Like, because especially with like films that are much longer. Like, I just like, the beginning is quite terrifying. The middle is like just setting up, and then the end is the kind of the big
the big climax.
Yeah, the climax, and I just love it when you can kind of see it straight out like that. I'm really glad you enjoyed the film. I love it. Like I do really like it. I'm probably one of those people who had a Jaws poster in their room in university, with Pulp Fiction and a few and maybe a Bob Marley poster. But yeah, I absolutely love it. Like it goes back to my childhood and things like that. And it's just for me, like I view it within like a load of different films that are kind of together as like a 70s, 80s classic. You're thinking of like Alien or Ghostbusters and then probably a few other Spielberg movies. I think you said Jaws, and then did you say, you mentioned another film, Danielle, and I was just like, no, we're doing Jaws, like we've got to do Jaws. I can't remember which one it was.
Train to Busan, yeah, which I've never seen. Which
yeah,
apparently they're remaking, but I would like to see the original before.
I imagine, is it if it's a Hollywood remake, then
yeah, it's going to be an American remake, yeah.
They've made a sequel as well already that came out last year.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, I've not seen it yet, but I think it's out on like VOD and stuff like that.
Oh, curious. Okay, well, maybe that'll be something to watch in the future. But yeah, so I absolutely love it. Liam, what did you think rewatching it? And just tell me a few of your thoughts, I suppose, on the movie in general.
Yeah, so obviously it's great, isn't it? It's a lot of fun. It's so fun and playful and also a little bit scary at times. And I think like the two main kind of influences, obviously number one is Spielberg's direction, and then number two is John Williams' score for me, which is like super sinister at times, and then also like incorporates like this real playfulness that like you would hear on like E.T. and like Indiana Jones and stuff like that. Whereas obviously this film is completely different to any of those, but he still manages to incorporate that playfulness, which kind of makes it seem lighter at times, and I think more kind of accessible than maybe it would be without his score. And I think like this, I think the score hit John Williams' score on this film kind of boosted him into, you know, superstardom of like composers, because then he got Star Wars after this and kind of just went on from there and did every single big film under the sun. But yeah, this film is great, and it's influenced so much since as well, in terms of like the, obviously, well, there's about, I don't know how many shark films there are now, you know, how many kind of open water films.
The recent
films.
Cinematic masterpiece, The Meg.
Oh, The Meg. I like The Meg. It's stupid,
so
isn't
good.
It?
It's not stupid. It's a serious film about a big shark. It's the unofficial sequel to Jaws, I think.
I like how it's just like, right, so like there was Jaws, there was a big shark. Then I think when Jaws 2, the shark was bigger. Jaws 3, the shark was even bigger. Then the Meg's like, let's just go like prehistoric, absolutely ginormous.
Shark.
Like the biggest shark you've ever seen in your life. All right, yeah, let's do it. Yeah, that's great. But even like little influences, like obviously, I don't know if you know, but Spielberg and his team, they named the mechanical shark Bruce. And in Finding Nemo, the shark is called Bruce as well.
That's cool.
There's like all these like little tiny like connections and kind of influences on films that you probably like, I don't know, you wouldn't even think about, but it's almost like potentially one of the most important films, or one of the most important blockbusters of all time. Not to mention, like, it came out in 1975 and it still holds up. Like that is,
yeah, that's what I was so surprised
impressive.
By. That's what, it's just a very watchable film.
There's not many people other than Spielberg, because I would suggest, even some, you know, I know other people would argue differently, but to me, I don't think the original Star Wars films quite hold up anymore. Whereas Spielberg's, like with Indiana Jones and Jaws and E.T. and even Close Encounters, that was the 70s, and that, oh my god, like that still looked absolutely beautiful. Like there's a reason why they still show that film in cinemas, and they keep re-releasing it in, you know, the Blu-ray and then 4K, and because it is such a beautiful film. And that's another Richard Dreyfuss and Spielberg kind of collaboration as well, which is just superb. So yeah, bottom line is I absolutely love this film, as you can tell.
Amazing. That's what I want to hear. I love it when we just all like, because I think this film is a classic, and as we say, like, and I'll come on to it in a second, like, it's pretty straightforward, but it's just everyone loves it, because everyone just thinks it's absolutely amazing. And I think it's that simpleness and straightforwardness, that, but also that like universally scary thing of just like a shark in human infested waters is like, it's just so thrilling and exciting. So let's move on to the plot. So as we've mentioned a couple of times, like, it is pretty straightforward, which is a kind of, I think it's some of the beauty of the film. But did you expect more from it, Danielle, or did you largely just expect? Because I think it's in pop culture, so we all know it's just about a big shark. Did you expect more, or was it kind of just where you live up to your expectations?
when you mentioned the Finding Nemo reference before, as soon as the bit where Quint is in, they're in like the town meeting and he scratches his fingers down the shoulder, I was like, that's from The Simpsons. And I love it when I watch films I've never seen, classic films, and I'm like, oh my God, that's from The Simpsons. And it makes sense. Like, oh. I don't know what I was expecting when I went into it. I think I just expected it was this big classic, but yeah, it's so playful and sinister. And I think that juxtaposition really works, as it does in so many of like Steven Spielberg's films, where it's like so beautiful, but there's like this underlying current of terror, of uncertainty, and yeah.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, isn't it? It goes to kind of show that, like, I think a lot of films, I suppose, like newer films, and this is going to sound like incredibly yadar, but like I feel like a lot of newer films just like try like make things complex or add like little twists just to kind of make things a little bit more interesting, when actually, like, if you come up with like a quite unique, I mean, I think the film was based on a book, but if you come up with like a unique, straightforward plot to a film or a story, then it doesn't have to particularly have anything that's particularly twist worthy or anything. It just has to be quality, really. I was reading a little bit about this film, and someone said, like, do you remember, just an article that I was reading, someone said, like, do you remember the first time you watched it? And I, like, proper can't. I feel like it's just always been there, which is probably a theme of a lot of classic films.
Yeah, I feel like that with Ghostbusters.
It's just
always been there for me. It's
it just appears in your life, doesn't it? Yeah. I think, Liam, do you remember when you first, like, do you remember how young you were when you first watched it? Or, was it just, like, did it just appear and you just knew about it?
Yeah, it's a weird one. I didn't watch it properly for the first time until only about 3 years ago. But I've always known about the film, and I've always known kind of exactly what it's about. And I think it's always kind of scared me a little bit, because I remember being a kid going in the sea and always thinking, what if a shark comes and gets me? Like, genuinely. And that stems from, I believe, this film, and that's from me from a young age, not even watching it, just knowing that this film exists and what it's about, which is kind of like crazy how kind of influential Spielberg has been there with kind of creating this kind of terror. And it's like, you're not going to get eaten by a shark in the UK, but even so, I'm like in the sea, like as a kid, absolutely cacking my pants because I think that something's going to come and get me, you know. And that's kind of like the great thing about it, like this film, and this creates this whole kind of different world where you are completely influenced and kind of affected by it, whether you've seen it or not, which I think is kind of like super powerful cinema making, really.
Yeah, it is
very Stephen King at times. It felt really Stephen King, just how like detective from the, well, police officer from the big city comes in like this small community who seems to really want to like thrive on tourism and have people in, but also hate out of towners. I was like, how does that work for your economy? But like it did feel very Stephen King, but I don't know if that's because it was like just the feel of it. But it reminded me that there is a true crime case that's related to this film called The Lady of the Dunes. And it was actually in Joe Hill, who is Stephen King's son. He wrote a book called The Skeleton Crew, How Amateur Sleuths Are Solving America's Coldest Cases. And there was a woman who was found quite close to where Jaws was shot, on the beach, dead. And they used, like, what's the word? The technology they had at the time did, like, a facial reconstruction. Mm. And there is, like, a picture online if you Google Lady of the Dunes of what she looks like. And Joe Hill is convinced that he saw her in the background of one of the beach scenes on Jaws.
Really?
Yeah, which is like really cool.
This is the level of story and information that we just don't usually get on this podcast. It's really good.
He thinks he saw a ghost?
No, not a ghost. He thinks it was like around the time she was murdered, she would have been alive when Jaws was being filmed. It's like she could have been an extra on the film.
Oh, that's creepy.
Isn't it? It's like, yeah. It has been like debunked. A lot of people said it's like far-fetched and everything, but it's another like weird layer to the film. Like,
there are other things in the background as well. That there are a couple of shots where they're out on the boat at nighttime and there are shooting stars that shoot through the sky. And apparently they weren't added. They were actually real shooting stars.
What if that was ET in the sky?
Yeah, what if it was?
It's just Spielberg's. all Spielberg's films are set in the same universe.
What if they were, though? I like that idea.
Yeah, I do.
And then that's very Stephen King as well, like the whole like a world building of all these interlocking stories.
Yeah, I'm up for that. Mm-hmm. I'm up for ET being the mm-hmm. same world as Jaws. I actually watched ET straight after I watched Jaws this week sometime. So I've got a lot of time for that movie as well. That kind of, I suppose, Liam's kind of slightly covered it off with like, maybe the movie isn't particularly scary, but like everything that comes with the movie is like a little bit like affects you when you like you just go to the beach or get in the water. Did you find the movie, Danielle? Obviously, you watched like the movie for the first time, like as an adult, which is, I suppose maybe is slightly different to watching it as a kid and seeing this massive shark in the water. Did you find the movie scary though, watching it first time?
Yeah, some bits were like really suspenseful. I think it was the score, like John Williams' music in it. But imagine that with like John Carpenter's like Halloween theme. And the sharks coming, it would be terrifying. It'd be so scary.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, imagine the score if it was John Carpenter's Halloween music. There were some bits like where they go down, they go out in the water overnight. Hooper and the police officer,
Chief Brody.
Yeah. They go out and he finds the boat and he's like, it's the local fisherman. He goes down with his like scuba gear on and the man's like body pops up. I was like, jump scare. You don't even see the shark till the end, which is like very, I like films when they do that. They don't really reveal anything right until it's like, it's got you on the edge of your seat.
Well, what's interesting about that is, so there's a story, and I don't know, people might know it really, but there's a story about how like they had the shark made by the effects team and it didn't look great at all. It was just awful. They wanted to have it changed, the shark, because it just looked so bad. And obviously this didn't have the budget basically. So the film was $9 million and they supposedly had a pretty tight budget. But so what Spielberg found was he had to basically direct the movie around like away from the shark as much as possible, but then I suppose that builds suspense if you're not seeing like they do that in like, I know like J.J. Abrams does that in a lot of his like more monstery movies and like Cloverfield and Super 8, where like you don't really see the monster, which obviously builds suspense for the monster itself. So I think it is pretty scary like that. I think it's not generally like I didn't find it like a scary movie. Like I wouldn't say Halloween, if I was looking into scary movies, I wouldn't put Jaws on. But you know, I imagine in the cinema, especially at the time, it was pretty scary. And
I imagine like, what if you were back in the day in the cinema and you went to see it? Like you'd be like, oh my god, it would be so tense.
Yeah, it would be very, very tense. Yeah. Next point. So we'll move on in a minute to the performances, which I'm not that fussed by myself in general, but you guys obviously might have a bit to say about it. But the face off the face off with the shark, that whole kind of, I think it's about half an hour, isn't it, that end part. I think it just looks really good and impressive, and like they don't spend too much time like actually with the shark, but like the whole scene where that you get to know that the characters a little bit more, and then you actually see the battle with the shark. Considering, I don't know, I can understand why they thought the shark didn't look that scary, because it's just like a big block of breeze broad or whatever it might have been. But I think it was pretty impressive in general. What did you guys think about it?
I loved it. I loved it just when he comes on the boat. He's like eating the boat. It was very like much like, oh my God. And they were like, it's so much bigger than we expected. When they got on Quint's boat, I was like, they are going to need a bigger boat. That is such a rusty old boat.
It not only is it like a famous line, but it's also like a truism. They just should have had a bigger boat.
He kept saying it. Yeah. The detective kept saying it. I was like, he's right. They need a bigger boat. Like,
they should have gone back and then got a bigger boat, shouldn't they? Liam, what did you think about that kind of whole end bit where they like end up taking on the shark?
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? It's they almost make the shark out to be like a monster, like something otherworldly, with thoughts and kind of, because it's kind of like meticulous in kind of how it's trying to attack the boat. You know, and sharks aren't aren't that clever. Like, they might be clever to compared to fishes, but like, this shark is like outsmarting humans here. Like, and that is that make that's where you kind of like question, oh my god, are they going to be okay here? Because this is like the biggest shark ever, and it's also like really clever as well.
Yeah. So
you kind of like you do kind of like fear for them, and it's great though when the shark is kind of like attacking the boat, and then it jumps on the boat and it eats Quint, isn't it?
I could not believe that. I was like, oh my god. I was like, they've all just formed this friendship and now he's gone.
That's a real gory scene as well. Like, yeah. it is great, but it's really gory. The thing that confuses me about that scene is like, he's being eaten, he's got a knife in his hand, and he's kind of just like slapping it against the shark rather than kind of like trying to stab it. I was like, stab the shark, you've got a knife right there. But well, yeah,
I liked it when they used those big sticks to pull in the barrels. I was like, just hit the shark with the stick, like, scare him off with the stick, he won't come back.
Yeah, you can definitely tell it's the 70s with some of the techniques they're using by just like following it with a barrel. Like, you'd surely have radar or something, be able to get over that. I mean, it's a shark that big. But
the one thing, like, why did they wait so long to pull out, what's his name? Richard Dreyfuss's character, which is who? What's his name?
Hooper.
Why did they wait till, like, 10 minutes from the end to be like, oh, I've got these real poisonous, like, spiky things that if we spike it in the mouth, it'll kill it? Because the shark has been jumping at them for ages, and kind of you do see before they even mention that the shark come up with its mouth open. So it's like 10 minutes from the end, oh yeah, we do have these things that probably could kill it. But I prefer the way they kill it. The way they kill it at the end is awesome.
Yeah,
it is great.
I said, you know, I said exactly the same thing. And I think this is the thing with like older films, that like they're always lovely and quite charming, but then there's things where you just go like, why didn't you just do this within like minute 10? But
yeah,
he does every time a shark's come up, he's got his mouth open. And I just kept thinking, like, just you should have just done this all this stuff earlier, really, shouldn't you? But I suppose that's I imagine they only have one shark or one shark head, and had his mouth open, he couldn't afford another one. So
I feel like Hooper though, he has a real respect for sharks and the ocean. And I think a part of him did want to preserve the shark as it was so big and foreboding for science.
I love how Hooper's just like hiding at the bottom of the sea whilst whilst Brody does all the hard work and like literally like throws a gas canister in his mouth and then blows the shark into absolutely pieces. He's just kind of camped down there. Like, I mean, I would probably do that, to be honest. I would do that. I mean, he's literally just been in the cage, you know, getting rattled by like the biggest shark he's ever seen. So I would probably think, you know what, I'm gonna have a 5 minute little breakdown here.
He's reassessing his career with sharks.
Yeah. I love Richard Dreyfuss as well. He's great. He's real charismatic. I think he's probably like in this film, he probably is the strongest actor within this film. I love him. I think he's great in this and in Close Encounters. I think he's better in that, but I think he's real, real great kind of actor that works well with Spielberg.
Yeah, perfect. That leads us really well to the performances. So, like, I really didn't notice too much about the performances. I think what you're saying is basically true. I think the only thing I thought was like Richard Dreyfuss, just because he has a lot of scenes where he's like particularly shocked at how big the shark is, or shocked at how the injuries of this woman at the beginning where they said was done by a propeller. Like, I think that, and everyone else just kind of like, I don't know, just has quite a gentle role really, like nothing too demanding. Did anyone pick anything out of the performances, or can we largely move on from this section?
The mayor of the town is so evil.
He
just wants the tourism. He just wants to keep the beaches open. He wants to wear a different nautical blazer at the beach every time he goes. And I was like, this is not weather for a blazer at the beach. I really enjoyed his... I thought his performance was very, like, Scooby-Doo villain.
Yeah.
Well, if there's Scooby-Doo, you think he was the shark.
The mayor.
Yeah, but then he's not. It's someone else.
The mayor is the real villain here, right? Because all the shark is doing is, you know, doing what it is programmed to do, and that's eat things and swim really fast. But the mayor, what an evil piece of shit. He's just so like, The mayor literally is like the is the exact kind of the same as the Tory government, just like, we won't do anything.
I was going to say that, yeah.
We won't do anything. We want to keep everything open until it's too late, until everyone's dead. Literally.
And it wasn't until he was like, my children were at the beach as well. It's like, yeah, that other woman's kid was killed in the water in front of your children, and you were still like, keep it open.
I felt really sorry for Brody, though, when the woman whose child died, she goes up to him kind of in full, like, black funeral gear, gives him a right slap and says, you knew about the woman that died here a couple of weeks ago. And he's like, but, like, he couldn't have closed the beaches himself. Like, one man couldn't, because everyone else wanted to keep them open. But
Brody is a scientific advisor during COVID, isn't it? And everyone's going to blame them when this is over and Boris Johnson will get scot-free, the mayor. But we always say, like, that we won't bring politics into it. And every now and again, we'll just have we can't contain ourselves and we have a little snipe.
That shows how, like, I don't know, how the film does really hold up, and it can be used to, like, sort of mirror what's going on now and mirror, like, future events.
It's a pretty universal concept, I imagine. Yeah, like, people wanted to do one thing and the correct thing to do is something else. Like, I actually think, I don't know if this was true, I feel like there's a quote, I think this is true, there's a quote where when people say about, someone asked Boris Johnson what, like, who his inspiration was, and he said the mayor from Jaws, like, as a joke, because he's just a big joker. And look, he's fucking done it, hasn't he? So anyway, enough of the politics. Let's move on to the technical stuff, because I can feel a rant brewing. I can feel it brewing. So the technical aspect, this is the bit where we could probably get our teeth stuck into a little bit, excuse the pun, because this is essentially us just kind of, let's just basically go mad about the direction and about the score. We spoke about the score a little bit. This is I think this is Spielberg's first big movies. I think it was before Close Encounters. And from a technical standpoint, I think it's pretty, like, it's what adds to the scares and adds to the whole vibe of the film, I think, really. The things that I think of when I think of the direction are, like you said, Danielle, like the beginning scenes where, like, the camera is underneath or the camera is almost acting as the shark.
So dreamy.
It's really, really interesting, I think. And actually the scene that I thought straight away when I was writing the agenda was actually the weird zooming in and zooming out shot of Chief Brody, you know, when the shark first appears and, like, it zooms in on his face but zooms out on the background. And I don't know what that even is. And I wish Connor was here, because he'd probably be able to give me a bit of a clue with that. But I thought, I just think there's loads of different things that really add to the movie. What do we reckon about the film from a technical standpoint? Liam, I'll go with you.
It's technically spot on, isn't it? you can tell I'm not a film student. No, it's great, isn't it? I think kind of the cinematography is beautiful. I think what impressed me the most, especially this time around, which is probably, I think it's my third viewing of the film, is how cinematic they make just one boat in the ocean.
Yes.
Like, that is impressive. And that's down to kind of three things mainly. That's down to the direction, the cinematography, and the score that can all kind of, like, combine together to make this kind of playfulness. I think as well, like, in terms of, like, the practical effects, obviously what they've done with the shark, they've had issues with it, but I think it's still pretty flawless. I think there might be one shot for a split second where you can see something kind of mechanical with the shark. I couldn't pick it out, but I have seen an image of that. I think as well, like, it won three Oscars, didn't it, for sound, for editing, and for the score. So I think that kind of goes to show how technically kind of spot on it was, if it's winning kind of those kind of massive awards. I just think it is kind of spot on. Everything kind of comes together perfectly, really. And I don't know, there are so many little things where you think, like, oh, if this had have gone wrong, Spielberg, we wouldn't have got like Indiana Jones or E.T. or all these amazing Spielberg films. Jurassic Park. You know, there are so many things with this film that could have gone tits up, pretty much, and it has just gone on to kind of make him one of the biggest filmmakers of all time. And then similarly with John Williams, probably the greatest composer of all time. You know, this kind of catapulted him into kind of one of the greats, as it were, of the 70s. I don't think, if you take it for face value, it's a great film. But then if you kind of sit and think about what it has achieved and what it has influenced and what we have now because of it, I think it becomes even greater. And like, I think you can appreciate it even more because it might be one of the most important films ever, really.
Yeah, Danielle, got anything to add technically?
Yeah, just Steven Spielberg. Like, I always forget until I watch this film how like good of a director he is and how beautifully he sets everything up. Like, you know, some scenes are so dreamlike, especially like when everyone's on the beach and having a good time, but then it's always this like sinister background and edge to it. I love it. No, it was beautiful, all the colours and everything, just like, I think that's just with it being from the 70s and those like that colour palette of the time, but it is just, it's such a like well done film. I think Steven Spielberg as well, as you were saying, the shark maybe didn't look as like ferocious as he wanted to, but he really just works at what he's got. And it just shows how he's like went on to become like one of like the most like renowned directors.
Yeah, I think the good thing, I was just thinking about this whole thing around like the shark and it not being, maybe wasn't what it wanted. And then, yeah, like you say, having to work with what you've got. But I think, I mean, that if that story, you know, that story kind of gone around Hollywood and that can only add to the props of Spielberg, I think, especially early in his career, if like he's been given like a bit of a naff hand and he's just kind of got to work with what he's got. I just think that just shows the skill of him and like what he can do. Like, when I look at Spielberg films, he's almost got a brand, hasn't he, really? I think.
Yeah.
Especially early in his career. I think kind of later on, as he's grown older and probably become more interested in kind of maybe different topics. But early Spielberg definitely has like a brand, and it's kind of synonymous with like mid to late 70s and 80s. But I just think he's just got such a craft with what he's doing and what he wants to do. And I love him. He's my favourite, by far, my favourite filmmaker. And I just love the fact that, you know, I think it's quite an open secret, the fact that he wasn't particularly happy with The Shark and it just wasn't doing what he wanted, but he just cracked on. And I think it really shows, because essentially the film, yeah, it's about the shark, but it's about everything around the shark as well. Like Liam said, I suppose the shark is just, shark's just being the shark, I suppose. But like, it's all these terrible decisions that are made around this, and then what they've got to do to try and find it. So the shark is just like a small part of everything else that's going on. I suppose he really lent into that a bit. To be honest, that's kind of what I think anyway. I think it's really interesting what you said before, Liam, actually, about like what we have now, and like, I suppose, from like inspiration in terms of both family filmmaking and maybe a bit scary filmmaking, and the example that I use with J.J. Abrams and like having the monster or having the shark, not always in focus. But I think this was, I'd done a little reading about this previously, as like, I don't know if you guys are like watching films and you end up just going on like an internet binge, and you're like, you'll start on Wikipedia and then you end up on some website that you've never heard of, looking at people talk about the film. But what I read a few years ago was like, this was the first, like this was basically the start of the summer blockbuster. So before that, there wasn't a particularly seasonal blockbuster. You know, obviously you had films released at different times, but this started the kind of the summer blockbuster boom. And it's just, I think it's really interesting that it's Spielberg who started that, and he's just added to that like so much over his career. And when you talk about what we have now, you know, maybe, because all, you know, we talk about Disney a lot in this, and we talk about different studios, but I think it's definitely helped the industry as a whole, because if there wasn't a blockbuster season before this film, then I don't know, it just feels like, would we be where we are with many different films and many different genres? Anyone? I don't know.
I'm just like, I agree. Just thinking as well, some of the blockbusters, obviously there was Jaws, there was Star Wars, and just thinking what came after that, there was obviously Jurassic Park, which was Spielberg. E.T. Yeah, all those big summer blockbusters really have stemmed from this.
Yeah, they have, yeah. I don't think it's like... I just find it really interesting the way that, like, it, you know, there's so much of Spielberg's footprint on, like, the whole of the industry. And, like, I was a bit snarky a few years ago when I think he came out and mentioned something about, like, streaming or what it was doing to the movie industry.
Oh, yeah, he said he didn't want to... He would never do something for streaming services.
I think he's actually just signed on to do something. I don't know whether it's produce or direct, but I think he has. So.
Change your mind then, did you, Steve?
Yeah, come on, Steve. You don't know too much, do you? But like, I think, you know, everything up to the streaming era is probably like, has been crafted at least a little bit by Spielberg. And, you know, I think
Stranger Things, like, you can see just that.
Oh, yeah.
Police officer being dropped in this like mad situation, like obviously with him. Hopper from Stranger Things and Brody in this film, like he's moved from the big city to this small town.
His footprint's everywhere. His footprint's over absolutely everything, really, isn't it? I think, and I think that's a good place to just maybe wrap up a little bit and just say, like, has anyone kind of got any other business to do with, like, I suppose this film or anything that they just wanted to say about it, Liam?
I was going to say before about kind of the off-camera kind of goings-on. And with Roy Scheider and Robert Shaw, so it was Quentin Brody, they absolutely hated each other's guts, which is kind of funny. And it kind of adds to, like, some of the tension on screen when you, like, kind of know that they really did hate each other. And I don't know why. But I can see Robert Shaw being quite a difficult man to get along with. I know, like, obviously he's acting in this film, but for some reason I look at him and think, you're probably like this in real life, a bit of an awkward, stubborn old man. And what is that accent he does? It's almost like half pirate, half American. It's really strange. Like, I don't know what he was going for, but like there are some times where like I don't have a clue what he's saying. He just kind of goes like the shark. Like, what did he just say? Pardon? But yeah, I think like there are loads of little things like that, loads of little tidbits like that that are brilliant, and they do add to it. And I just think like that is kind of like what we love about kind of like these old films like this and these old blockbusters, because there is like so much like that goes on behind the scenes that when you know about it makes like when you watch it the next time, it makes it even more interesting and even more fun kind of knowing these things, knowing that like there, you know, there could be a little shot where you can see the mechanics of the shark, you know, so you can look out for that. And you know, they were like, there could be that girl in the
Lady
background.
Lady of the Dunes. Yeah,
like you said, mm-hmm. Danielle, like there are loads of these little interesting things that you can just kind of revisit time and time again to kind of look out for. And I think like that is what cinema is all about, is about kind of the rewatchability and kind of that. I think like the rewatchability is key, really, because if people just watched films once and never watched them again, then I they would just fall off the face of the earth and no one would ever hear about them again. And it's kind of the rewatchability that Spielberg has, doesn't he? I mean,
yeah, oh my God.
I think every person on this planet who is old enough to watch films has watched Spielberg films more than once, or a Spielberg film more than once. It's just, even if you've seen it on, you know, like ITV has Jurassic Park
every weekend.
You know, if it's not on ITV1, it's on ITV2. If it's not on ITV2, it's on ITV3. Do you know what I mean? It's always on. And I just think, even if you've not sat, even if you're not purposefully sat down to watch it, you are going to be watching a Spielberg film at some point in your life, whether you like it or not, pretty much, because he is Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening, sitting down with the takeaway kind of TV, kind of movies that you can just sit there and watch, and you don't have to think too much about them. Or you can think too much about them if you want. You know, there is a lot of stuff to get into with them if you want to, but you can also just sit there and be entertained. And I think that is why Spielberg probably is one of the greatest filmmakers of all time, because it is just pure, you know, unadulterated entertainment that we all love. You know, we might not all love all of his films, but most of his films have that kind of accessibility.
Are there any Spielberg films that you don't like?
Good question. Coming out of questions. I don't know. You know, I think any Spielberg films I don't like, not, I don't think so really. I think there's one Indiana. Oh, well, yeah. Chris, did he direct Kingdom of the Crystal Skull?
He did direct that. Unfortunately, yeah,
that's not great. I haven't seen some of the. I feel like there's a couple of ones that he did that are a bit more serious in like the late 80s. I think they're supposed to be all right, but like I haven't seen them. And I read because I've got a book, I read a book recently on Spielberg. And there's a couple in there like don't take my fancy, but I'm sure they're good. Like I just don't. And
I think with Spielberg, there are some that aren't as strong, like One comes to mind is the BFG remake from a few years ago.
Did he do that?
Yeah, but it's still really entertaining. It's not rubbish. It's still entertaining. And like even like his most recent two films, The Post, which I think is one of his strongest films ever, which only came out like 3 years ago, and Ready Player One, which I know not everyone loves, but genuinely it's the most fun I've had in the cinema, like, probably ever, because it's so immersive and it's so nostalgic, and it throws back to the 70s and 80s and stuff like that, and all the great films that, you know, that we all love. And yeah, I just think like he's still nailing it every time. Well, maybe
he
not every
time. He
needs
to apply himself more to streaming services. I reckon he could do a few like good maybe mini-series.
I hope he doesn't really? Though. I think the thing about Spielberg is he's cinematic, and I don't think he should move away from that. And I think so long as there are filmmakers like Spielberg that stick to being cinematic, then I think cinema will always kind of remain. I think once filmmakers like that start moving away, like obviously Scorsese couldn't get the funds for his films if he didn't go to streaming, that's fine. But I personally would prefer it if Scorsese had have kept like The Irishman in cinemas and his The Flower Moon film. I can't think of the actual title of the book that he's adapting, but his next film is going to be on Apple. But I would much rather it be in the cinema. It's maybe not as cinematic as Spielberg. It definitely isn't cinematic, but I think there are great filmmakers that should remain in the cinema like Spielberg and Scorsese. I don't know. I just personally don't want it to change. There's so much streaming services. There are so many. I subscribe to all of them, so I'm not one to moan, but I think there are certain filmmakers that shouldn't go to streaming.
Yeah. I think that's a good monologue to end with, really. Yeah. I'd actually first, I just want to know, Danielle, if there's any Spielberg that you aren't particularly into?
Not that I can think of, but I do remember, the film AI, Artificial Intelligence?
Oh, yeah.
And the first half was done by Stanley Kubrick, wasn't it? And then he passed away. And the second half was done by Steven Spielberg. I remember watching that as a child, and, like, it was so sad. I remember at the end of it just sobbing, like, oh, my God. The little robot boy just wants to be loved.
I haven't seen it either.
And when I think about it now, I never think like, oh my God, that is a Steven Spielberg film. But it's like, yeah, that's maybe I'll revisit that AI.
Yeah, it's good. I think I need to visit it in general, yeah. That's cool. Maybe that's a suggestion for people. That's quite a cool place to kind of wrap up, I think. What we do is, and I don't know if Danielle knows this because I have it, I don't think I've let her know, but we do like a popcorn score at the end. So like what we thought out of 100 we would give this film on like our first or second take. So Danielle, with your first take in mind, how many popcorns out of 100 would you give Jaws?
I'm going to give it 98 out of
100. Oh my days. Is that the highest we've ever had?
Is it?
No, Luke, you gave Booksmart 100, right?
Oh, yeah, sure it did.
Booksmart is 100. It's so good. 100.
It is. See, the thing is, Danielle, we are really we're really picky with our popcorns. I think me and Luke might be a little bit more lax. Connor is so strict with his popcorns. He rarely goes over 90. It could be the greatest film of all time and he won't go over 90.
He's like,
because yeah, he's one of those that thinks, yeah, he's one of those people that think, you know, almost, obviously, he will probably give something 100 at some point, but there's no such thing as like the perfect film, or there is. And it's just, even then that doesn't deserve 100 popcorns. It's like,
oh my God.
To be fair, I'm always quite reluctant to go like above 95 for some reason. I just think if it's 100, then there is no room for improvement. Yeah, you can't maneuver around it.
If Jaws was remade today, who do you think it would be remade by, and who would be the cast? Do you think?
I'd be so upset if it was remade. You know,
is it one of those films?
I think a lot of the early Spielberg. So you're talking like Indiana Jones, E.T.,
yeah.
Jaws, Jurassic Park. Even though obviously they're still on that train a little bit, I'd be gutted if they remade it though. So I don't even want to like answer the question. It'd make me upset.
It would be J.J. Abrams, though, wouldn't it? It would be J.J. Abrams, 100%. Or like James Cameron would do it, and he'd have like a $1 billion budget, and it would be like alien sharks or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it'd be a prequel
to Jaws.
how we came about off the shark. All right, so I'm going to go with my popcorns, you know, and I'm going to go, I think it's 89. I think it's 89 for me. It's really, really good. And I am slightly reluctant to go. Like 89, I think 100, we've really fucked ourselves on this, because when we started, 100 is like hard work, I think. But you think out of 10, it's quite easy. But 89 is basically 9 out of 10. So yeah, I'll go 89. How about you, Liam?
I'll go 90, just a solid 90. I think actually... Yeah, 90. See, it's weird because when I'm doing like my Letterboxd reviews and I go like out of 5 stars seems so much different to 100 popcorns. Like I gave this 4.5 stars, but 4.5 stars really would be, it would be 90 popcorns, wouldn't it? Exactly. It would be, yeah. Mathematically, if you're splitting it into, yeah.
The mathematics of Letterboxd.
Yes, the mathematics of stars and popcorns for you right there.
Great. Well, I think our aggregate would be about 93, 94, wouldn't it? So that's a pretty highly rated film, and it is a classic, of course. So all that we've got left to do really is, I suppose, just say that you can follow us on @firsttakepod across Instagram and Twitter. And thank you so much, Danielle, for coming on. It was really, really nice to hear
your thoughts. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, it's nice to have another voice and just kind of like hear people's perspectives on like an absolute classic that like we'd all seen. And obviously, as I said before, as soon as you were like, oh, I haven't seen Jaws, I was just like, well, I've got it on Blu-ray, we're definitely doing it, so it's that. So I kind of like told the lads we were doing that. But yeah, it was really nice to have you on, so thanks a lot for coming.
Thank you for having me.
And I suppose all that's left to say is keep well, everyone. And until next time, we will see you soon. Bye.